Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Our next guest, Brad Klein, Golf Channel, golfadvisor.com, also a design consultant on golf course architecture, by the way. Brad, what does that mean, a design consultant?
That means I don't have a license, and if I find someone dumb enough to hire me, I feel great.
What do you think so far of the PGA Championship? We've got Gary Woodland playing lights out.
Well, it's more like the Greater Hartford Open. It's not a demanding golf course. It's down the middle, and then you look up and hit it at the pin. And if you can keep it in play and you can make some putts. Yesterday, Woodland made 152 feet of putts. So as strong a player as he is, what put him in position yesterday with a 64 was all that putting. The one good thing about this golf course, besides the fact that they got the greens and shit, but it's a wide open field. It doesn't favor any particular player because it's the fairways are holding, the greens are holding. If you're hitting the ball well, you're going to be in contention. And there's a 62 or a 63 out there. In fact, Koepka shot 63 today, so nobody's out of it who makes the cut. So that's interesting. It's not the most exciting golf course. You know, I'm watching on the third hole today, par three. Nobody has made a bogey all day. So it's a front pin, 130 yards. They're just firing. So, you know, it's a golf course where you fire at the pins. And greens are holding. So that's what we got.
Brad Klein with us, Golf Channel, golfadvisor.com. It's interesting to me that, you know, you look at, you know, we like dominance in sports. We like dynasties. We like when golfers win a couple of majors in three tries, and it makes it more interesting, exciting for the peripheral fan. But what you see right now with a wide open tournament and majors in the last, you know, 10 or so, pretty wide open, you look at different guys and new names who are popping up. Is that more fun for you, or is that good for golf?
Well, as a writer, I would rather have more stories, and you kind of get tired of writing about Tiger's fourth comeback. And so I think what's great is the young guns and the friendly rivalry among people like Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler. And you got then two other kind of guys who are Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka, who are quiet, you know, very powerful guns. You got some very fine Europeans. Poulter's on the rebound. I think there's some really interesting. Tommy Fleetwood is a fascinating character and a great player. So I think you got a lot of variety of players out there who are, I think, all interesting stories. And that to me is more interesting. I know the casual fan and the talk radio guys, they like the story of one dominant. Makes their job easier. But you know, you got 25 million people who play golf in this country. And 250 of them are on TV. They're all great players. Every one of them is a fabulous world-class player. And if you're 200th in the world rankings, you're still a stunning player capable of shooting 62, 63 any day or winning a major. And I think that's hard to, you know, it's hard maybe for the average sports fan to grasp it, but for those of us who know golf, that's the fact.
Gary Woodland was 100-1 to win the PGA. If you and I were holding a ticket, maybe $50, at Gary Woodland to win at 100-1 after two rounds, are we feeling pretty good, or are we saying, there's a lot of golf left?
We have a corporate ethics policy at Golf Channel, so I have to be careful about this answer. But, well, you're feeling better about it now than you would have on Wednesday. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And I guarantee the odds have changed. But this is going to be a very volatile leaderboard. Because there's a 63 out there, that means you can shoot 70 and lose seven shots. to the lead. So I think it's going to come down. And the PGA likes it this way, by the way. They like a close tournament. They don't want runaways. They want compression. They want, Ben Kern, one of the club pros. It looks like he'll make the cut at even par. They want club pros. They want a close field. And we saw that yesterday. There are not a lot of high scores. There are not a lot of triple bogeys out there. There were no eagles yesterday. Everybody's going to make 15 pars, two birdies, and a bogey. That's what they like.
What's the number that wins this?
Well, before they started yesterday, I said 14 under, and it's going to be 14 or 15 probably.
Brad Klein with Golf Channel, golfadvisor.com. Tiger, you're out on the course. You see people. We look at his scores. Of course, he's not all the way back. But is the hysteria around him? Are the fans around him? What does it feel like when he's on the course?
I was out there yesterday, and I stood or tried to stand near him. It's absolute pandemonium. And this is, the parting of the Red Sea and the gods walking right down the middle. And it was stunning. One of the best comments is Rory McIlroy, who's only, top five golfer in the world with four majors, I guess. And he said he has to accept that the attention is going to be on Tiger, and three-quarters of the people out there are out to root for Tiger. So it was amazing. I walked the first hole with him, and I stood there and on the final hole, and the throngs just came through, and they cheered every move. And Tiger is not the same player. He's not as explosive. He's not as dynamic. And even this year, he's lost about 7-8 miles per hour in his swing speed. But he's somehow the most exciting, magnetic personality. As we like to say, he doesn't just move the needle. He is the needle. And you see that with the crowd. And it's amazing. They're out there 10, 15 deep at the range. They got this fantastic driving range, a stadium style. It can hold 10,000 people. They're all out there. And they're 10 deep standing on shoulders just to get a glimpse of Tiger. And it's amazing. And it's in some ways stronger than it's ever been.
What do you think that's about?
I think that golf fans want to identify with someone. This is one of the problems, I think, that the LPGA has. The LPGA has a game that people can relate to. But I think people go out there not to relate to the game, but to be awed and overwhelmed by the power and the velocity and the charisma and the tradition and the history. And so Tiger exudes that. Palmer had a lot of that. I remember when I was out on tour caddying in the 70s and 80s, Palmer had that charisma, not in the same numbers, but certainly in the same kind of depth and charisma quality, kind of a scintillating sensibility that was out there. But Tiger brings the more casual sports fan, the guy or the person and the women who listen to a puck radio, they're on various websites all the time, they're on chat rooms, and they can identify with him even if they don't know any other golfer. So it's quite remarkable, and it certainly transcends golf. It transcends sports.
If Tiger wins big again, if he wins a major, maybe in the way Nicklaus did, I think in 86, where he just comes from an unexpected place. What does that do to that audience? What does it do to golf? Does it fulfill everybody's hope, or is it is that a special? Is that one more special than Tiger winning his first? Or what does that do to golf?
Well, all it does is boost ratings that week. So when Tiger plays, the web traffic goes up 40%. And we know this, it's probably 60%. And the TV ratings go up dramatically. The British Open, the last couple of weeks ago, when Tiger had the lead on the ninth hole, that was the highest-rated major in years. So, but now, having said that, he draws an audience. He doesn't draw golfers to the golf course. He just draws an audience. But there's a lot to be said for that. So, the current sort of slow decline of the industry is not going to be solved by Tiger winning a major. Having said that, it would be a great story, and it would be amazing, and it's a testament to his fortitude and his persistence. And, he's overcome a lot physically and self-induced as well. So, I love good stories. That would be a great story. But We're still waiting, and I'm not convinced he has it in him physically. I think he has it in him mentally, but, you know, heat like this takes a toll. And the tour he's playing, I'm not sure how many events, 13, 14, maybe 15 this year. That takes a toll at his competitive level. Four surgeries on his back. He's fighting a different, you know, he's working with a different swing, a fixed, as he calls it, a fixed spine position. And he's outgunned by 30 players out there now. He's not the longest guy in tour. There are 30 guys longer than him. So it's much harder for him now. Much harder.
Brad Klein, Golf Channel, with us. You've been on the course as a caddy, as a media member. What is that pressure like? What will that pressure be like on the final round if we have a wide-open tournament on a wide-open course? What are those guys going to be feeling? And is there an advantage to a guy like Dustin Johnson who's got some experience on days like that?
Well, it's hard to know what, if anything, goes through his head when he's out there because he's so physically gifted. He's so secure in his identity. And frankly, you know, he's not a complex person, and that works to his advantage. But, you know, the other thing that happens is, first of all, everybody feels pressure. I know, and then it's a question of how do you respond. And some guys fall into a kind of very calm zone. When Molinari, Francesco Molinari won the British Open a couple of weeks ago, he wasn't feeling pressure, or he wasn't experiencing it in a pressure way. There was a calm that came over him. And I think what you do is you transcend and you get so accustomed to it that you revert to a very simple set of physical cues and swing thoughts as few as possible, and you fall back into what your body's been doing for 20 years. And that calmness is what allows you to win. I don't think you can play under the pressure of feeling pressure. I think what happens is you kind of transcend it, and it's a zen sort of feeling where, you know, you're either in the zone or sometimes you get nervous and jumpy, and that happens too. That happens. It's happened to Ricky Fowler. It's happened to a lot of guys. So you never quite know. And and that's, you know, a body type. That's a, what do you call it? The stars are aligned, and the body waves, and so on. So it's hard to know who's going to be. But having said that, it's evident to me that Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson fall into that mode a little more readily than a lot of the other players.
That's
a big advantage.
That experience, you know, when you're watching a major, you know, these guys are all good. You mentioned it. Even Gary Woodland, who people say is a surprise to be there, that's a hell of a golfer at the top there, who's 100-1 to win this thing. Is what's the difference between a guy who's like 50th in the world and a guy who's like top five in the world as you watch them play?
The difference is that they make their 8-foot putts. That's all. If you make your putts inside 8 feet, you have a chance of winning. And if you miss those, you're going to be 4 shots back at the end of the week. So what's the difference there? It's a matter of comfort zone, feeling, confidence, and a little bit of luck. But all it is making 6 8-foot putts, whether for par or birdie. And that's these guys all have fantastic swings. I was watching yesterday on the 11th hole, and I'm going to get the players wrong, but it was Justin Rose, Jordan Spieth, and somebody else, and they laid up on the 11th hole, and they all laid up. They were 3 feet apart. They were 270 off the tee. They laid up with a 2-iron or a long iron. They were 3 feet apart. And so all these guys are great ball strikers. But it's a matter, and we see this with Jordan Spieth this year. He's not making 8-9-foot putts. He's not making the 6-footers for par that he needs to. It's a small difference. You do that 3-4 times a week. That's all it is. And, you know, then you sit there mumbling to yourself at the end of the round. So,
golfer,
not much.
When I've covered golf tournaments in one of the big surprises to me is, you know, I was at Pebble Beach, one of the first majors that I covered, and Tiger's running away from this thing. It was very difficult to cover that tournament while being on the course. You had to decide either to follow a golfer or to sit on a hole or to go back to the media tent and watch the damn thing on TV. How do you think a golf tournament is best covered?
Well, first of all, I don't cover a golf tournament. I cover a part of it. So I'm writing about the golf course, the setup, and I can and I have. I've done game. Well, you know, I'll go back to the one time I wrote the big game, the big narrative story. I was on the golf course, and in the press tent every day from 5, 6 in the morning to 9 at night, went to, and you got to go to the interviews. You got to talk to the caddies. You got to go out and watch some shots. And I think I ended up the last 9 holes, I probably went to the press tent and watched it.
Yeah.
So you can't summarize the flow and the ebb and the, you know, the kind of drama of a golf tournament while you're out there, if you're covering it. You only see a small part. So what I do now, because I'm writing so much, I'm going to write about not just the golf course, but about what the overall event means. I'll go there, and I come home Friday, and then I'll watch it on the weekend.
Yeah.
And I'll write my story Sunday night. So it's harder to cover it, but the other thing is you don't have to, because everybody's watched it. You know, that's the other thing. Now, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, TV coverage was the last 4 holes or 5 holes, and
yeah,
you didn't have the detailed stat package and the money list and all that and websites. So you had to tell the story. Well, now you don't have to tell the story. You can write a kind of opinion or judgment or assessment that's very different than what we call a shot-by-shot gamer. So in some ways, it's easier as long as you don't try to tell people what they've already seen.
Brad Klein, you're making a lot of sense. I appreciate you, man.
Hey, if I had Woodland, I'd be making more sense.
There you go. Should have had him.
Should have bet.
Yep, you should have been. You got to listen to this show. I'm telling you, I told people a couple days ago. What do? I can't drive to your house and make you do it. All right, leave it here. How in the heck is Chip Kelly doing? We're going to find out coming up top of the hour. Ben Bulch, LA Times with the Bruins will be joining us. Oregon State fans, got some news for you. And one of your great administrators, Zach Lassiter at Oregon State, Deputy Athletic Director, will be joining us to talk about what's going on at Oregon State, including the retro Benny the Beaver logos coming back on the helmet. I like that. Go retro. I like going retro. Retro, how many years back is retro, though? I mean, is 5 years? In your wardrobe, Alabama Adriana, if we go back, like, how many years to go retro?
A lot longer than 5.
Yeah, I would have said a lot longer than 5,
10?
Too. I would say longer than that, too.
Yeah, I would probably say like 15, 20.
Yeah, I would have said 20, that first thing that popped in my head.
If I can get my 8th grade gym t-shirt on, I'd be retro. Is that what we're saying? All tight. You know?
Yeah, I'd have to be squeezing into some baby clothes.
That'd be a fun picture.
Yeah, we just find some clothes, you know, find your 8th grade t-shirt and just get it in your size.
And you know what else I noticed? I was in one of these department stores.
You were in a department store?
Yeah, I was in a department store the other day, and I needed a shirt. And Anna and I were going out, and I didn't really have a shirt to wear, like a nice shirt, whatever. And so I went into the Nordstrom store, and I was looking at what was on the racks. And they're making everything very slim cut, okay? All the shirts are all slim cut. And the salesperson came over because what they're also doing, and they do this at Nordstrom, it's a dirty trick, is they take their price tag and they put it over the size on the tag that is on the shirt. So it takes you a long time to tell what size something is. You're sitting there fumbling with it. So the salesperson comes over and I said, all these tags are covering up the sizes. And she says, yeah, they do that because then it forces or encourages a salesperson to have to help you. And I thought that was an interesting way to sell more shirts. Huh. And I said, okay, I'll try this one on. I'll try that one on. I'm one of these people that's between a large and an extra large on a shirt. Okay. So I got the large and the extra large. You know how I knew that the large didn't fit me? I put it on, I buttoned it, and I turned to look in the mirror, and I heard, rip. I split it like the Incredible Hulk. And I had a moment there where I was like, am I going to have to buy this shirt? And so it literally like, it's so, and the fabric was very thin, you know? It's like this thin fabric. I'm not a large in those shirts.
Have you noticed how they changed the sizes too? Like, if you went back to when you were college, you have any sizes from when you were college? I have an old Lewis and Clark shirt. I graduated from Lewis and Clark, and it's a large. And I pulled it out. It's actually, if you put it up against something now, it's a small.
Yeah.
It's a small. What's in the small?
Or you got bigger.
No. Yeah. Nope.
I ripped that shirt. The salesperson's like, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Yeah, I think we're gonna have to sew this one back together." And luckily it was a Nordstrom because they were just like, no big deal. They took it, you know, and I was like, I'll take the extra large.
Don't take any offense to this, but the first thing that came into my mind was fat guy in a little coat.
All right, we have to go to break.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.